Hey there, this is Darren. I'm one of the co-hosts of the Nibbles and Bits Vet Men podcast. I wanted to pop on here real quick just before the episode got started. You all may notice a little bit of difference in the audio from some of our previous episodes. We aren't in our normal recording area, so we may hear a little bit of background noise as we go through. Secondly, I want to go ahead and say thank you to everybody who's listening in, sending us feedback, communicating with us, letting us know what your thoughts are. We really appreciate you guys sending all that in. Matthew and I started this little podcast as just a side thing. We really are passionate about veterinary medicine, and we're super grateful to have a little platform here to talk about it and, you know, spread the word a little bit more. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Lastly, I wanted to go ahead and put our little disclaimer here. There may be some sensitive content in this episode, so listener discretion is advised.
Welcome, everybody, to a very special episode of Nibbles and Bits, the Vet Med Podcast. I'm Matthew.
And my name is Darren, and today we have a very special guest.
I'm Bailey.
Yay!
Bailey! She's like our bestie.
Yeah.
So today's episode is about
veterinary emergency medicine, as that is currently Bailey's role in the field. I guess to start off, we can let Bailey give a little background on herself.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So I'm a registered veterinary technician here in Colorado, just like Darren and Matt. I've been working in emergency medicine for the past 2 years. Before that, I worked in general practice or wellness medicine, whatever you want to call it. I've actually worked with both Darren and Matt in different clinics before, which is how we all met. And I'm really enjoying emergency medicine now. I'm working in the ICU permanently for now. Not, that doesn't make sense, permanently for now. You have to edit that out. but yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
Nice.
Because cool. You also went to CMC?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah, we're all alumni of CMC. Nice.
Yeah, we're all CMC grads.
Bailey and I graduated in the same class.
Yeah, so,
Matt's old.
Yeah, we've established that on the podcast many times. But, so they've known each other longer than I've known Bailey. But Bailey worked for
almost the same amount of time.
Yeah, well, I guess so, because, as I'm going to explain, Bailey worked at the clinic I'm still currently working at prior to her graduation, and then she ended up doing her externship at a different clinic because that's just how the program worked. You weren't allowed to work and do your externship at the same place. And she ended up accepting the job at that location, and then Darren ended up leaving my current practice and going to work for the one that Bailey did, and that's kind of how we all work together.
I abandoned you.
Yeah. That's all right.
So Bailey, how long did you work in general practice before you moved on to emergency med?
Yeah. Gosh, time flies. It's hard to keep track of my own timeline of life, but I think it was about 6 years.
Oh, dang.
That I was in general practice. And now these last 2 years of emergency medicine, because I'm going on 8 years of being a technician, so.
Wow, nice.
Yeah.
Because your first job was at where Darren worked, but then when you moved, you did the mobile?
Yeah, so my very first job after graduating college was with a mixed animal mobile practice.
Okay.
And that was a lot of fun. We also did some emergency stuff then, but it was all mobile on the road, you know, out in the field, in people's homes, etc. So very different than the emergency medicine I'm doing now. But, And then I got out of the large animal medicine side of things, and that's when I started working full-time, where Darren and I were working together.
That's right. Yeah, she, you have the kind of broadest experience of all of us. I've done some emergency stuff at my initial practice that I worked at in Arizona. We took our own emergencies. We rotated weekends for the clinics in the town because it was a smaller town. We all agreed to do that. So I do have some late night, you know, on-call experience stuff. But mostly, it was a fairly scheduled 9 to 5, 8 to 5.
Gotcha. Yeah.
In quotations, because you kind of stay until it's done. It's never
8 to 5.
Yeah,
no, it's usually like 8 to 8 sometimes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
8 to 11. But more regularly scheduled than say like in middle of the night emergencies like she had. Sure. And then I don't think I've ever actually worked for a truly mobile vet. We've done some house call things, but
yeah.
Otherwise.
Mobile practice was a lot of fun. It's not for everyone. Some people love it, some people hate it, but you gain a lot of skills because you're kind of a one-man show or two-person show, I guess. Mm-hmm. Doing all the things out in the middle of nowhere.
And I imagine even if it's a similar case or a similar call that you get, you probably have to make things up depending on the location you're at, because not everybody's location is going to be the same or what they have available and stuff.
Exactly.
And you just
kind of got to
anticipate what you need. Sort of like emergency. You got to
be
prepared for whatever.
Yeah, similar for sure. And no matter how many times you think you have the correct equipment that you need on the truck, you never do.
There's always one thing that you're missing.
There's always something missing.
Just sort of like on our trip over here to see Bailey, we're always, we're trying to remember if we forgot anything. And of course, you get there and you're like, oh yeah, I forgot that. And,
yep.
Oh yeah.
Always.
Well.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we're only human.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I have very broad, because I did kind of your situation, Matt, where we all rotated through our weekends at the first clinic I ever worked at as an uncertified technician. And I think I was usually the only one who answered my phone. Everybody else didn't answer their phone, or they didn't have cell service.
Was that back home before you went into the program?
That was back
home.
Okay. Yep, that was before I went into the program. Nice. And then my externship was primarily equine farm calls, that sort of thing, which really you have to make sure that you have everything down to a T.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to, improvise.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
0 out of 10 would not recommend doing a C-section out in the field in the wind because, my word.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not very fun.
Yeah. No matter how nice the farmer says their facilities are.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Facility being a field.
Yeah.
A field. Or a squeeze chute with that is out in the middle of the desert.
Or just a slab of concrete. I've been there, done that, too. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Bailey, what made you want to switch over to emergency med? Was it kind of just happenstance?
It was somewhat happenstance. So my husband and I moved across the state, I know, away from you two, sadly, but we're all back together again now. Moved across the state, and I really wasn't sure what I wanted to continue to do in the vet med career space. So I started working for a veterinary technician relief company, where I would go. Basically, I had the ability to just sign up for different shifts at several different hospitals that were working with them all across the state. And I wanted to push my knowledge and my skills and my boundaries a little bit by working at some of the larger name corporate hospitals in the state, like Wheat Ridge and VRCC and VCA, Alameda East, some of the larger, more specialty emergency practices. Mm-hmm. And so I picked up several relief shifts there over the course of a year. And in their different departments, I found that I was really liking work in the ICU. So I didn't want to do traveling relief forever because it was very hard on my gas tank and my wallet. But it was a lot of fun. And I finally found a job that was open near where I lived that was for an emergency clinic that had their own dedicated ICU. And I started reliefing there and begged them to hire me and weaseled my way in there. And now it's been 2 years there, and I've loved it. So
nice.
Good. I feel like part of the fulfillment in whatever role you're in, whether it be in the veterinary field or whatever, but finding a spot that you just truly enjoy and sticking with it.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like for you it's been ICU med.
Yeah, I really enjoy the getting to work so closely with the patients, you know, as, I mean, that's why we all became veterinary technicians in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. We're the ones that are one-on-one and hands-on with the animals. Mm-hmm. And in the ICU, that's even more so. Typically, veterinarians or the doctors aren't stationed in the ICU. They have, you know, a separate desk or separate office elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And technicians are the only one in the room manning the show. And, you know, we will go grab a doctor when we need them. But otherwise, all of the patient care and decisions are on us. So it's been really fulfilling to be in charge of your patient care like that.
Nice. That, honestly, that sounds like heaven.
Yeah.
Like, because if you have your orders or you have whatever you need to do, yep, and you can just be self-fulfilling,
yep,
work at your own pace or whatever pace patients need you to be, like...
Yeah, exactly.
Not having to deal with clients talking to you in the rooms as you're finishing up an outpatient.
Right.
And I mean, like, some people love the outpatient aspect. For me, it's kind of meh.
And some people thrive in customer service. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I won't say that I didn't enjoy customer service, but I don't know if I would go back to, like, a client-facing mm-hmm. position if right. given the chance.
Right.
Just because I love working with the animals so much more. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, in my 3 12-hour shifts a week, I probably see one or two clients in all those three shifts. And part of that is because I also work overnights. So I work 3/12s overnights. So mm-hmm. I never see any people other than the people I work with and the animals, which is fine by me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a good segue into my next question, which you talked about some things that you don't necessarily miss from general practice.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some things that you do, and maybe if there are any others that you didn't really like about general practice that you are enjoying now on the emergency side?
Yeah, that's a tough one because general practice and emergency medicine are so different for lots of different reasons. But one of the things that I could tell I was starting to miss even when I was doing my traveling relief work was kind of the feeling of like a team or a family unit in the hospital. Yeah. You know, working with both of you in the past, it's really nice to work with people who are, you know, kind of your friends, you're in it together. In the emergency medicine world, you're typically rotating shifts, and it's kind of a revolving door of who you work with. Not that you don't get to know the people you work alongside, but it's not as a tight-knit family, see each other 5 days a week
mm-hmm.
unit like general practice is. So I kind of miss having that, like, team aspect a little bit, but other than that, I can't think of anything specific.
Okay. Dentistry?
Oh, yeah. No dentistry. Which I didn't have to do a lot of dentistry in my general practice days, thankfully, because Darren here loves dentistry, so he did it while I did none. But now I hardly ever have to look at teeth, so...
Yeah.
No complaints about that.
It's interesting. I feel like most people in that world, minus like a couple of people, just like dentistry is not their thing. They will do it if they have to.
Yeah.
But if they don't have to,
mm-hmm.
they would.
It's
you know,
a love it or hate it type mm-hmm. thing. Like you either like love dentistry and love doing dentals, or you just it's not your thing at all, and you would just stay away from it.
Yeah. If I never had to do a dental again, that would be.
You wouldn't complain?
Yeah, I wouldn't complain. I mean, I don't generally... Yeah, I don't like them that much. I mean,
yeah.
If they're the routine, the actual true grade ones, clean, polish,
sure.
I'll do those all day. But
sure.
It's almost never that easy and quick. And it's just time-consuming, and it's messy. And yeah, it's not my favorite.
Yeah.
I guess I'm the odd duck out here.
Yeah.
I love dentistry.
Yes,
that's good. We
yeah.
need people who love dentistry so that Matt and I don't have to do
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah, every time somebody's like, oh, can I do this one? I'm like,
absolutely.
All yours.
Sure.
I mean, I'll monitor, whatever.
Absolutely
yeah.
can.
Yeah. I think maybe I got a little spoiled, though, because I worked with a dental specialist, technician, and
a veterinarian.
And, like...
Yeah, you got to see the cooler aspects.
That's A-team dentistry,
Not to mention the efficiency of it, I think.
Yeah.
Ooh, but...
So that actually makes me think of another question, once I remember it here in a minute. So that actually makes me think of another question. So first of all, do you have like an actual location you go to every day, or it's not like because you're not mobile, right?
Cause
you're,
Yeah. I'm not doing like the traveling relief stuff anymore, and we're not mobile. We're the ER that I work at is a part of like a huge veterinary specialty campus, kind of I would call it. Because we have several different veterinary specialty services all on one campus in one huge building. So,
cool.
Yeah.
So, then what's like your limit to things that you are able to do? You said you don't really generally see teeth. Mainly a lot of that kind of stuff isn't true emergencies. They can generally wait for the next day or go to like a specialist for that. But are you guys able to do... like lots of orthopedic stuff? Are you able to, you know, place pins and do the plates and those types of things? Or is that also stuff you still have to...
That's typically stuff we'll turf to its respective specialty. Okay. But it's typically can be accommodated really quickly because, like, we have a wonderful building of orthopedic surgeons right next to us.
Okay, so they don't have to travel very far. Okay.
Yeah, so we have... dentistry, dermatology, soft tissue surgery, orthopedic surgery, and then the ER, all in one campus.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that's pretty convenient then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Versus.
Yeah. And then the only specialty we don't have, like in our immediate vicinity, is neurology, which we would love to, but.
Yeah, that's.
Oh, and internal medicine. We have a great internal medicine specialty next to us.
Neurology is definitely a. Very hard to come by unless you're in the main city, because it's a very, very specific field, obviously.
Yeah, very specialized.
That's why they call them specialties. But, especially over where Darren and I are, we had one doctor, but I guess he I don't know if he retired or just... Well, I think he moved to Denver or this side or whatever, but, we don't really have a good... neuro specialist. I think there's still some in Junction, but maybe
not. I think there's one or two in Grand Junction.
Yeah, yeah, they're few and far between, unfortunately, because they're such a needed specialty. Mm-hmm. But
But going back to the different branches of the location you're at, do they have ER hours as well?
It's a little tricky. Most of the other specialties operate more similar to a general practice in that they're Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. And then the patients that need extra care, we care for in the ICU or the ER while they're unavailable. But the nice thing is all of the veterinarians throughout all the specialties and within our ER have, like, really close working relationships to one another. So if something were to come into the ER that we needed a consult on or something, they would be available.
Okay, cool.
Well, that's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so what we're mainly able to do, what our goal is, just the goal of emergency medicine in general, is to stabilize the patient, keep it comfortable, keep it alive until it needs to see its respective specialty the next morning.
Mm-hmm. Which is, honestly, I feel like that's a very different story versus, in some places where, your nearest neurologist or orthopedic or whatever specialist is like a 4, 5, 6 hour drive.
Hours away. Right, right.
So, and most people don't really want to drive, like, won't or can't or for whatever reason can't make
unable,
it there.
Yeah.
Which I guess that leads to a little bit of a follow-up question. Do you see... Because in general practice or in, emergency situations in, like, a smaller valley area or something like that, usually you'll see a little more harder decisions like euthanasia versus seeking out a specialist. Have you noticed a difference with that?
Yeah, I would say that from working at like a really rural GP or even the rural mobile practice, now working in a larger city that has the ER and all the specialties surrounding, people seem a lot more willing to have their pets seen by the different specialties. Mm-hmm. You know, not to say it's not a cost concern for most people still, but our ER offers a lot of different financing options. Care credit, scratch pay, you know, vet billing, all sorts of things. And it's typically unlikely that we have someone completely be unable to, you know, unable to afford treatment.
Yeah.
In general. So that is a benefit for sure of having specialists close by. And instead of, you know, telling them, well, tomorrow you need to come pick up your pet and drive 3 hours to the orthopedist. Right. Actually, we're just going to have one of the orthopedic nurses come over, like walk across the parking lot and get your dog and take it to surgery. Yeah. Oh, so that's really nice. Yeah.
And then do you normally see just kind of locals? I mean, we're still fairly spread out here where you live, a little bit remote, but like for us, when we have people driving like an hour from Aspen or even further from, you know, some other more remote places that don't have either just a general practice. So I don't know if a lot of your clients come from all over the place, or is it mostly just kind of the general area?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, you know, we do have a large population right in the city where the ER is located, so of course we see a lot of locals, but we also see a surprising amount of clients from the New Mexico area that drive up north to come see us, because there's not a lot of veterinary care down there either. So we get a lot of people that come from the south up towards us. Yeah.
Neat.
Yeah.
Nice. I had a question, but it's
disappeared.
Oh, handover, like for, you know, from the time that they've spent there, you know, in the emergency room or ICU, handing over to, like, say, the, you know, it's a new day, they can go see the regular. Mm-hmm. Is that usually pretty fluid? Is it?
Yeah. You know, it really depends on the case. Most of the time we do try and, you know, discharge the patients back to their primary or, you know, general care doctors the next day if they're able to. But a lot of the times, the owners elect not to. Sometimes the owners will just say, no, you know, you guys are doing great work. They are comfortable there. They're getting all the care they need. Just go ahead and keep them until they're fully healthy and ready to discharge. So sometimes we'll have, like, diabetics, for instance, new diabetic patients. Dogs or cats will stay with us for 3 or 4 days.
Oh, wow.
Instead of going back to their regular veterinarian to regulate them, because we're helping them through that initial process. So
yeah, sounds like the continuity of care is a little more fluid and streamlined.
Yeah I think it's nice for people. It's probably more convenient for owners too, to not come pick up their dog and keep transporting them back and forth between veterinary clinics. And some people just want them to be watched more closely, so we're happy to do that.
I feel that's pretty similar, at least my experience with my clinic, because our emergency, unfortunately, we don't really have a very good, consistent emergency facilities. The closest one is technically about 30, 40 minutes away, depending on what traffic does. Yeah.
In the winter, it's like an hour.
Yeah, and then in the other direction, out west, it's an hour and a half, at least, again, depending on weather and traffic. And, yeah, for people having to transfer back and forth, and because even those ERs, unless it's on the weekend, they're not open 24/7 during the week, which is very unfortunate, because people are having to now drive all that time, and then that's money that they're spending with that, and then potentially lost from work, and having to bring them back to us, which then we also in turn close and then have to send them back. So it's kind of nice if they're able to stay in one in one place. That's really nice to
less
be able to do.
Less stress for the pet, too.
Yeah, for sure.
100%. I was about to say, especially for critically ill patients or unstable patients.
Like, or even just the ones that don't travel well.
Right.
You know, especially with like cats, if they're already,
already
super
hate
stressed.
Going in the car.
Yeah. And then just makes their condition worse or whatever.
Thankfully, there have been bleeding hearts of the veterinary technicians that, like, they will offer to stay overnight with a pet that is, like, critical. Like, you really shouldn't be moving it.
Yeah.
Right.
So it makes it, I feel like that's where a lot of burnout can come out, though. Because if, you know, we're doing that all the time, then unfortunately it's just how it goes. But
and there are those rare cases where, I mean, I guess, knock on wood, they have been few and far between. Where it's just like, we are not confident that this patient will survive the travel, which is just really unfortunate, because we know they need the care that we may not be able to provide very well, because just our facility is not set up for that 24-hour monitoring, but also we're not confident that they're going to make it. So just the fact that you have the ability to transfer them either quickly or easily, and or just take care of them in the 24/7 is really nice.
It is. It's a huge game changer from where I've worked previously. And I love living, you know, more remotely and in rural areas, but being a little closer to a larger city and more veterinary hospitals like I am now has been a game changer for my career for sure.
The access it provides for clients is
better, like better patient care, better client care.
Better ingredients, Papa John's.
And in turn, better, you know.
Quality of life.
Yeah, quality of life.
Quality of care. Yeah.
I'm looking for a word.
Continuity.
Career or something. Career.
Fulfillment.
Maybe. Okay. I don't know.
We'll just keep throwing out words until we figure
it
out.
That's fine.
Whenever you think of it, you can just let us know. You'll just say it, and then I'll just re-edit.
Okay. The power and magic of editing.
Yeah. Okay.
So something else that I wanted to ask is about just equipment-wise, because we still send out quite a bit of stuff, because we just don't have the capacity and or financial ability to have all the nice fancy equipment and be able to run all the tests and stuff. I'm sure you still send out certain things if it's not absolutely critical, but are there some things that you guys have that you are enjoying that you guys have as an emergency clinic versus what may not be accessible in all general practice?
Yeah, that's a good question. So in general, we have some of the more basic equipment still, of course, like radiology, x-ray, and digital ultrasound. I will say we perform and interpret a lot more x-ray and ultrasound in emergency medicine.
Send them over to your radiology department across the street or whatever, and they can get back to you pretty
quickly?
Or
we don't have a radiologist on the campus 24/7. We do have the kind of online digital services, but that's kind of one of the differences between general practice veterinarians and emergency veterinarians. I think we take so many more x-rays and do so much more ultrasound that our doctors are maybe more comfortable interpreting those than general practice docs. So occasionally we'll use a radiologist if we have to, but not always. X-ray, ultrasound. We do have a CT in our building as well.
Nice.
Which technically isn't accessible to the ER personally, like 24/7. But typically, like a stat CT scan isn't going to be necessary. Usually the pet can wait, you know, until the next morning for the appropriate professionals to run the CT machine to do that. But it's really nice to have. We have all of your standard blood analyzing equipment to run your basic CBCs and chemistries, your analysis. We do have what's called a VCM machine, though, and that it's a brand new machine to us in the past month, so I will apologize in advance for not having all the information about it, but it's basically to test clotting, like different clotting disorders.
Okay. So not just clotting times.
Yeah, different from your PTPTT clotting times. It actually like creates a clot from the blood sample that you put in it and like tests its elasticity and
that's cool.
How fast it clots, how fast it breaks down, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's like thromboelastography or something really something fancy like that. Yeah, yeah. But in the ER, we deal with a lot of clotting issues, whether that be too many clots or no clots. So it's been a really helpful machine for us to have.
Do you have things like blood gases and and that kind of stuff?
Yep, we do run blood gases quite often. I'm trying to think what else we might have. Also, another perk of being more in a city and a little closer to Denver, we send out a ton of samples to IDEX and then receive them, 12 hours, 24 hours later. So the send out turnaround time is a lot quicker too.
And just talking about that, are you guys affected by the weather as much? Because I know with us, because it has to go from where we're at, and actually it gets, I don't know why they do this, because there is, I think, a hub in Denver, but it goes to Tennessee. So a lot of times when there's winter storms and things, we have to tell people it could take an extra couple days, because and we've had that happen.
I haven't several noticed that
occasions, so that's definitely really nice too.
Yeah, no, our hospital has like their own IDEX courier that fancy. Comes to directly pick up samples. Like we don't even technically ship them.
Oh wow!
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. It is nice. Yeah, we had that back in Arizona. He would drive from Phoenix 3 hours to Lake Havasu to pick up just the local stuff and drive back. I'm like, that's a cool job, I guess.
Yeah, I can imagine something similar happens from like here to Denver.
Yeah, that's really nice to have.
Yeah.
Here's maybe a silly question. Do you guys all have the same like practice management system?
All the specialties?
Mm-hmm.
No. Most of us do, but not all. We can access each other's records, though, which is nice. Especially, so the emergency department and internal medicine work very, very closely together. We actually share the ICU with each other.
Gotcha.
And, of course, internal medicine patients are typically the ones that are the sickest and have the most conditions and require the most care. So we have a lot of internal medicine pets coming into the ER frequently, and we're able to access their records to care for that patient appropriately.
Yeah.
Nice. Gotcha. So then is each department technically owned and operated separately, but you work together?
Yep.
Okay, so it's not just under one big umbrella?
Nope.
Okay, that can make things probably a little bit challenging at times.
It does, yeah. But it... The campus has been working like in that fashion for so many years now. I mean, I think it's been decades at this point that the campus has like existed. The ER has been kind of the central initial business that started there, and then the specialties branched out around it. So I think they've just gotten into a good working relationship, good groove with each other.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you talked about the, I guess, kind of clinical stuff side of equipment and all that. But do you do specifically, do you work with any of the emergency surgery stuff, or are you just internal medicine, like triage type, stabilize them, and then if they need surgery, that's out of your hands specifically?
So surgery and anesthesia is out of my hands personally. However, our emergency, like our main emergency department and teams do surgery all the time.
So you're just not involved with the surgery part.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I'm just in the ICU, I'm solely taking care of hospitalized patients.
Okay.
So we have three different teams that run the ER as a whole. So we have our front of house, which is our triaging technicians, our customer service representatives, our receptionists, etc. Then we have our, what we call our outpatient team, which is kind of like your main on-the-floor emergency doctors and technicians who are doing the stabilizing, helping to triage, doing kind of the initial emergency treatments. And then if those pets that they are done treating require hospitalization or further care, then that's when they come through the ICU door to see me. And continue to be cared for and stabilized for however long it takes.
Okay. So, since we've covered kind of the general way it all flows and works, if you wouldn't mind divulging some more specifics, is there any case that you were just really into that was really cool, that was really memorable, or even, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be like happiest story, happiest ending.
Sure,
like,
sure.
Even if it was just like a crazy, like maybe hit by a car or I don't know, something, just anything, any story that you wanted to share or...
Yeah,
or just,
absolutely.
Even if it's not necessarily a case or something specific that
yeah,
is
sure.
memorable working in the ER.
Yeah, there's always memorable things, whether good memories or bad memories in the ER. Just like human medicine, you know, the craziest things come in through the ER doors.
Yeah.
One case in particular that I will remember forever is a pointer that came in. All of a sudden, his owners noticed that his... he looked kind of bloated. His skin was like blown up, for lack of a better term.
Ooh.
And longish story short, he ended up having like the teeniest, tiniest puncture wound tracked either from a stick or a little grass on sticker weed puncture track through his skin and into one of his lungs.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah, and he was having trouble breathing, of course. As well, which is why part of the reason why his owners brought him in. But basically it created a balloon of a dog of sub-Q emphysema because that little puncture wound in his lung was leaking air into his sub-Q space. And so the entire poor dog was blown up like a balloon.
Wow.
It's
crazy.
Felt all crackly. Yeah,
yeah,
it was very, very bizarre. I've never seen or felt anything like it.
Yeah.
How bizarre. Yeah.
A few definitions just for, because I know some people are probably going to want to know. So, sub-Q means subcutaneous, so it's the space directly underneath the skin. So like when you scruff a dog or a cat, it's kind of all the excess space in between their skin. So that's where the air was trapped. If you can imagine, if it's trapped there, they're probably going to pop up like the...
Yeah, like a
Michelin
balloon.
Man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then, if I believe I'm correct, emphysema just generally means air where it shouldn't be.
Correct, Matt. According to a quick Google search, emphysema is described as a condition in which the air is abnormally present within the body tissues. There is a second definition of it, which is not relevant in this case, but it is a condition in which the air sacs of the lungs are damaged and enlarged.
Yeah, that was a very unique case.
Did the dog survive?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, he did. He was hospitalized for like 5 days, unfortunately.
Oh, wow. I'm sure.
Because we couldn't get a handle on, like, for lack of a better term, the leak from his lung.
Yeah.
You know, you can't necessarily just open
yeah.
up their chest and go and repair a microscopic mm-hmm. hole in their lungs,
right.
So we had to wait until it
but
healed
also,
over on its own.
Also, I assume you probably took x-rays,
mm-hmm.
didn't really find anything,
because right.
if it was a grass seed or whatever, not going to show
yeah.
up on x-ray. Did you end up doing a CT then and
uh-huh.
finding that there was something in there?
We did, yeah. We found a small air tract through the body on CT, which it still wasn't definitive. It was very difficult to even come up with a solid diagnosis, but kind of ruling out everything else, that's what we came up with.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy, crazy things that dogs get into.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Stuff you would never imagine. Mm-hmm.
So, you guys said that it was, you didn't really have a true diagnosis of, like, it was a foreign body migration.
Right. We never found something, like, solid to remove from anywhere.
Gotcha.
So that's why we kind of had to assume. Because the owners had no idea what had happened. There were no lacerations or skin missing or puncture wounds that we could visibly see.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no trauma that we could visibly see on the outside of the body, which was the weirdest part. But
yeah.
Yeah. But, no, that was definitely my most memorable one up until this point. I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure I know other emergency technicians out there have some way crazier ones. I've only been in the ER scene for 2 years, so... Yeah. Ask me next year.
Yeah, we did, Darren and I did a episode, which you guys should go back and listen to if you haven't, about kind of our craziest stories, and some of those
Tales
were,
from the trenches.
Yeah, definitely emergency type things, but, if any of you out there are fellow technicians and have some crazy ER stories you'd like to share,
yeah, send them our way.
Yeah, comment on this episode with that.
Another piece of equipment that we have, though, that I forgot to mention earlier, that's really cool that I work a lot with in the ICU is called High Flow.
Oh.
And it's basically, you can think of it as the in-between for, like, flow by oxygen to, like, a CPAP or a BiPAP, or, like, even a... or respirator, like in human medicine. It's so high flow is basically just exactly what it sounds like, is a high flow, a pressurized high flow of air into the dog's or cat's nasal passages. And it's a lot more effective than mask or flow by oxygen, things like that. And they don't have to be sedated or anesthetized to, you know, have that treatment and care. So we see a lot of different respiratory cases, and dogs or cats that are not thriving just sitting in an oxygen kennel using their own breaths and inhalations and expirations will go on high flow to help open their lungs up. Yeah.
So you said you had the oxygen kennels. Do you have like bariatric chambers and things like that too, or is that
no? Our internal medicine department used to have a hyperbaric oxygen chamber, but they don't anymore. I think it's fallen out of practice, to be honest. I don't think people recommend it anymore.
Okay.
But we do just have your basic oxygen kennels. We use a lot of oxygen, like nasal prongs as well.
Do they tolerate those decently?
Mm-hmm,
do you have to sedate them much or at all?
Depending on the patient's behavior, sometimes we give them some mild sedation to initially, like, get the prongs in their nose because it's irritating, but then we suture it to the side of their face. And, of course, put an e-collar on so they can't rip it out with their paws. But most of the time it's tolerated really well, especially for pets that actually really need the oxygen therapy. Usually they're panicking because they're struggling to breathe, and once they have the oxygen therapy, they calm down.
Okay.
Then they're like, oh!
Yeah. Oh, this is helping. Thank you. Yeah.
That's nice, yeah.
Yeah.
And it sounds a little easier to implement because, I mean, trying to hold a mask in front of a dog, a panicking dog's face.
Exactly, yeah.
Because especially since it's a closed thing, it's just like,
right, and it's not a long-term solution, right? Because they're constantly moving their face. So with the nasal prongs, they can... move around their kennel freely and sleep and eat and do whatever they want.
Cool.
During their ICU stay.
Nice. All right. Well, Bailey, thank you so much for
letting
us invade your space and drill you with all these questions.
Yeah. It was sort of an impromptu thing as we realized we're going to see
you. Yeah, we're all going to be together.
We should record to have you because we've talked about having her on as a guest and hopefully it won't be the last time.
Absolutely.
So,
anytime.
Awesome. Well, yep, there we go.
That's fine.
With the commotion. And on that note.
Yeah.
Thank you all for joining us, and we will see you all next time.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye.